This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. A little over 100 years ago, New Orleans had a red light district known as Storyville. And if you were a man looking to visit, but you didn't know where to start, you might pick up a blue book. Not the kind that you used in school. The blue book of Storyville was a catalog. It described the city's many brothels and prostitutes, and it helped to inspire the latest album from our guest, Don Vappy. Vappy grew up in the late 1960s and early 1970s playing string instruments in funk bands. But somewhere along the way, Vappy reached for a banjo. He explored traditional jazz and became a noted interpreter of the New Orleans music canon, as well as a composer of classical works. Don Vappy spoke with World Cafe's New Orleans correspondent Gwen Tompkins back in February, before New Orleans went into lockdown. We'll hear that interview after this live recording of the song, I Would If I Could, from Don Vappy's latest album, The Blue Book of Storyville.
If I could, you know I would hold you every night. If I could, you know I would treat you oh so right. Now that was the status quo. Oh baby, you know you get good loving like you should. I would if I could. Now if I could, you know I would hold you really tight. If I could, you know I would live my dream tonight. Oh baby, you thrill me so. Oh yeah, you know, romance all day, that's what I say. I would if I could. If I could, you know I would hold you really tight. If I could, you know I would live my dream tonight. Oh baby, you thrill me so. Oh yeah, you know, romance all day, that's what I say. I would if I could. You know I would hold you really tight. If I could, you know I would live my dream tonight. Oh baby, you thrill me so. Oh yeah, you know, romance all day, that's what I say. I would if I could. I would if I could. I would if I could.
That's Don Vappy with If I Could, I Would. That's a wonderful song. It's on your latest album, The Blue Book of Storyville. Now, you know, people who are from New Orleans know that a blue book is not for taking notes or writing an exam, right? This is adult education.
Well, some right? people do.
You know, the blue book pertained to the old red light district in New Orleans called Storyville. That's what it's commonly called,
right.
Which was adjacent to the French Quarter that offered legal prostitution, as well as other sort of elements of the sporting life, gambling, dancing, that sort of thing. And, you know, these books are not, you know, I mean, they're not common anymore. I mean, they're very, very rare, difficult to find. But I did find one that I want you to look at.
Okay.
All right. This is not an original. It's a copy of an original that is owned by one of the partners who owns Octavia Books here in New Orleans, a local bookstore. This was a book that was given to her mother's third husband when he was 14 years old. Let me give it to you.
Wow. What a gift. Merry Christmas, honey.
Talk about a rite of passage,
go,
huh?
Sow your oats.
So the book is actually blue. It's navy blue. And it has all, it's very small though. It's kind of almost the size of like a pamphlet, even though it's a bound book. And at the time back then, it was sold for, I don't know, 25 cents or 50 cents or something like that. But it was a book for, presumably for white men who were either coming to town or who were living in town to sort of be able to navigate this, you know, 19 square block area of Storyville and all of the brothels within, and many of the women who worked at the brothels. I mean, within that area, there were thousands of women who were working.
There's an ad for a piano tuner in here.
There is an ad.
C.D.
Right.
Walton, King of Piano Tuners, 1405 Canal Street.
But then there are also sort of ads for the actual establishments that are run by women here. Let's see here. Here's one. Miss W. O. Barrera at 341 North Basin Street. It says, this is one of the few places where a person can visit and leave with the sole satisfaction of having been in the midst of an array of beautiful women who know how to cleverly entertain the most fastidious gentlemen. Huh. It has been her mark in life to make friends and keep them.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's... it's such code language, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fastidious gentlemen, which I guess would suggest we have clean women. Our women are without disease.
Right.
Yes. We, so when you were you know, contemplating Storyville and the music that you wanted to write, what drew you to this part of town and this actual, you know, volume?
You know, when New Orleans turned 300 years old, I had it in my mind to write some songs connected to different things in the history or connected to the culture or connected to experiences I've had growing up in New Orleans. And so I did some reading, and that's when I actually found out about the Blue Book, and I thought it was, oh, geez, look, they had an IKEA catalog for women.
Oh, my goodness.
That's my first thought. It's like, here's a mail order, you know? And I mean, in a way, it's kind of dark.
Yes.
You know, it's very dark and kind of sad in a way. But, you know, I didn't want to write a sad song, so I just kind of made fun of it. But not really. But I did it in a way that I hope would make you think, but then, you know, enjoy the song, too.
It's true. It's true. And so I think that that's leading us actually to the song. This is the title song from the album The Blue Book of Storyville. Would you grace us with its presence?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Well, it happened in the district. Now it's all history, where men from all around got their kicks. Plenty pretty women, a catalog for sinning. Browse the pages, take your pick. All shapes and sizes, full of surprises, there for every man's desire. All on display like prepaid foreplay. Love for sale, love for hire. You get hooked on the book and book your hook. It's the Blue Book of Storyville. Thank you.
Now when all is said and done, all have had their fun, the morning sun comes creeping in. A few hours go by, la jolie fille lets out a sigh, and everything begins again. You see, it happened in the district, now it's all history, where men from all around got their kicks. Plenty of pretty women, a catalog for sinning, browse the pages, take your pick. You get hooked on the book, and book your hook, it's the Blue Book of Storyville. You get hooked on the book, book your hook, it's the Blue Book of Storyville. You get hooked on the book, and book your hook, it's the Blue Book of Storyville.
Wow. That was wonderful. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. So the protagonist of the song is sort of an interlocutor, somebody who's who is a denizen of Storyville, who is letting you know what's
exactly
walking
that's,
you around
that's
the
me.
Neighborhood.
Don Interlocutor Vappy.
Don Interlocutor Vappy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So aside from your work as a musician, you've done extensive cultural studies on Creoles in Louisiana, and you did produce this wonderful documentary, a PBS documentary called American Creole in 2006. It's called American Creole, New Orleans Reunion. Don Vappy, your mother appears in the documentary American Creole. Did she make a musical home for you as a child?
She, not on purpose, I think that was just her, because she didn't play music. She loved to dance. My dad didn't play music, but my mother's mother and all of her siblings played music. And the most well-known is Papa John Joseph. And then there was another brother.
What did he play, Papa John?
Papa John played bass.
He played bass.
I think he played a little bit of clarinet. I'm not sure. But another brother played clarinet. They called him Kaiser, Willie. Willie Kaiser Joseph. Kaiser was his nickname. So
a bossy man, we should say. Huh?
Maybe, but you know, there's all these stories. It was stories about him. Yes, yeah, you know, when he got that clarinet, they were still living out in the country, right? All the family made him go out in the cornfield with their clarinet because it was such an awful sound. Because they all played string instruments.
Right.
See? My grandmother played guitar and banjo. I didn't even know that till I was almost 20 years old. So.
And so, I mean, my understanding is that as a child, you know, you had sort of these experiences listening to music, at home,
all
that
in the
drew you
radio
to it.
Was always on.
Ah.
It was always on. And there was live music around, you know. Whenever we'd go somewhere, there'd be live music in the parties or dances or whatever. And in the schools, you know, we're always hearing it. So even in band, we were in school band. I played trumpet. Mm. And we were trying to play tunes that we would hear, like The Horse. Remember The Horse? Da 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 boom da 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 da. We were trying to play that on the trumpet, but we also played second line, the Joe Avery blues. You know, ba da bum 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 ba da ba da. I mean, we wanted to play that.
Right.
That was part of who we were, to try to groove and play music.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of Joe Avery's blues. Joe Avery's Blues. That is, I mean, if you come to New Orleans, you're going to hear that song. And if you haven't heard that song, then you haven't been to New Orleans. Our guest is Don Bappy. He's joined us at La Casita Studios in New Orleans. This is World Cafe. I'm Gwen Tompkins. On your recent album, Don Bappy, the album is The Blue Book of Storyville, you write and perform a song that's straight from your childhood, Red Wing.
Yeah.
Tell us about that one.
I wanted to do that song because, as I said, I wanted to do music that was write songs or that had some connection to the history, or even my history in New Orleans. And my history was at my grandmother's house with my grandmother and grandfather. We would sit on the porch. I must have been five. And the ice cream truck would come by and played that song. It was like, just play that. And it'd go through the whole thing. And when I hear that, I knew it was ice cream. So I was on the porch. And there was this uneven pause, not in time. And it would come back. So I guess I've been aware of, come think about it, now I'm realizing I've been aware of tempo and rhythm for a long time.
Long time, that's right. And so how does Red Wing, what does the term Red Wing mean?
Well, it's an old song about an Indian woman who, an American Indian woman, that her brave goes off to war and gets killed or something, and Red Wing's got a... Yeah, her name was Red Wing.
And is Red Wing also the name of the ice cream?
Well, that's the thing. When I never knew the name of that song. And then I'm in my 30s. I'm playing with some old guys, probably Willie Humphrey. And he plays this tune, and I play along with it. I could hear it, you know. And I said, Mr. Humphrey, what's the name of that song? He's like, it's called Red Wing. I'm like, oh. And I'm thinking, boy, that's the song they played on the ice cream truck. So I swear, I went home and had a dream that night. And in my dream, I saw the wing on the side of the truck. I could see the truck now in my mind. It's so clear. Red Wing Ice Cream. That was the name of the truck.
So
it played red, played the bridge for Red Wing.
That's
the
a
hook,
scream.
You know?
And you heard it from Willie Humphrey,
right.
Who played
clarinet.
Who played clarinet, that annoying instrument that people
in the cornfield and
they practice. Couldn't listen to.
But right? Willie was good. Man.
Willie. He really was good. He and his brother and all. And so may we ask you to share your version of Red Wing with us?
Sure.
All
sure.
Right. So this is Don Bappy with Red Wing.
End it like the ice cream truck.
That was beautiful.
But you know, that's one of those crossover songs. I've heard that in bluegrass, and different places around the country. And, you know, I think it was written by a British guy.
Interesting. Our guest is Don Vappy, whose latest album is called The Blue Book of Storyville. He's joined us at La Casita Studios in New Orleans. This is World Cafe. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Now, let me ask you this, Don Vappy. How far back do you go with the Marsalis brothers, Branford and Wynton Marsalis?
Oh, to at least teenage years. You know, we were playing in bands, competing against each other and playing for dances. And I was in a band called Track One, which actually still playing today. And Wynton and Branford were in the Creators.
The Creators.
I remember they had this huge PA system. I remember that. Like,
and so who won the Battle of the Bands?
Well, we both have different visions of that.
All right then. So for all intents and purposes, in this room at La Casita Studios, your band won the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah.
But if I were in a room with the Marsalis brothers, they might say something different.
They might say something different.
But you know what's so interesting is that all these years later, you know, you recently participated in a recording session in New Orleans led by Branford Marsalis, which included the tap dancer Savion Glover.
Yes.
And all. Now, I've heard that playing for a single dancer is some of the hardest playing you can do in jazz.
Well, he kind of came in and played with us. It was just like being like with a drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, you know, tapping rhythms. It was killing.
I believe it.
I was like, wow, look at this.
Well, what's the project?
Well, it's a soundtrack that Branford's working on, and I think it's called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Oh, boy. Yeah, from the play.
For Netflix. I think it's a Netflix version of it.
Oh, well, that's going to be something. Yeah, it's
looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, into a production. That's a television production.
It's a lot of fun.
Production. Yeah, that's
amazing.
Yeah,
we got to play some great tunes, you know. Maybe I don't know if I should say it, but Lazy Mama is one of my favorite Clarence Williams songs.
Well, let's listen. It's amazing how how it all comes back round again. You know, people always say that in this part of the country, it's true everywhere, but in this part of the country, you know, there's always the past and the present happening at the very same time. You know, you can just reach out and touch it. You know, the past.
It's all connected.
It's true, but you know. When the NEA jazz master Danny Barker, you know, came back to New Orleans in the mid-1960s, you know, he was a banjo player as well as a guitarist, just like yourself. But but when he came back after playing with Cab Calloway and Louis Armstrong and Louis Russell and so many other people, you know what I mean? There weren't a lot of young black people musicians who were interested in hearing his banjo. Did you have problems when you decided to commit yourself to this instrument? Did you have problems, getting an audience for it?
Well, not really. It's just that black people didn't like it.
And why?
Black people like Wynton Marsalis said in the documentary we did, he said, man, banjo has a plantation connotation. And, you know, we saw it as, probably realistically saw it as what it stood for, which at the time was made to stand for the image of the black slave. I read a book by Karen Lynn called Half Barbaric Twang. She talks about this character in another book who was called Banjo, which was a reinforcement of the character was like a step and fetch it type person.
Sure.
Nothing against him. He was an actor. But it was like, yeah, it's a mess, you know, kind of thing. Like,
Sort of a minstrel stereotype.
Minstrel, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, and you exaggerate the ignorant aspects of things, mm-hmm. or what's perceived to be as ignorance.
Right, right.
And then you have the ads to sell banjos in the late 1800s, Industrial Revolution, they started to make them as they make them now, which look like drums with a neck. Well, back then they weren't quite as sophisticated with all the mechanical parts on them like that, the screws and lugs, we call them. And the ads for would be like, the new Vega Fairbanks banjo is far superior to the primitive one played by the African slave. And you'd see this really awful caricature of a black person, you know, made to look
black with big licks.
Yeah.
And yes. Mm-hmm.
Slumped over and just
broken.
Yeah, broken. That's a good description. Broken. So, I mean, yeah, we didn't like it. And then the only time I saw it in my lifetime, I saw, you know, people like Manny Sales or the others would play for parties at the more wealthy white houses or places, residences. And it's not that we were against that, but it's like, this was a time of empowerment. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. So we're fighting against this stereotype. And
So how did you do it? How did you build your audience? You know, given the fact that you are at the time sort of pushing against a very big wave of resentment, you know, against the instrument.
You know, looking back, I was kind of like, on Zora Neale's side when she was dealing with Langston Hughes, you know, it's like, hey, man, you can't judge us by your measurements, you know?
Zora Neale Hurston?
Yeah.
Yes.
So she's like, you know, could they survive here? So what I did, I took the banjo and I did school programs, actually, and, you know, made young people aware of where it came from. It was a time of awareness back then, too. And I also played it the way I play it. I didn't try to become what people thought it should be. And I'll give you an example. When I started playing banjo in the bands, because at first I was playing guitar with these trios with Placide Adams and Gerald Adams, and I played bass too. I still do. A little bit. I love bass. Anyway, I'm playing guitar with them and stuff, so I started bringing the banjo on a couple of gigs. You know, one guy said, yeah, man, you know, the people would really like it if you played some banjo. And I thought, yeah, right. But I just did it because I wanted to. But the way most people play, in fact, one guy out on Basin Street, we playing. He said, that's all you got to do, man. Just play that. Da 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 da. I didn't like that.
Strumming.
Yeah, I mean, strumming was cool, but it was just like da-da-da-da-da. To me, it sounded like a railroad crossing. Ding, 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 ding. So what's that? So what I felt that would work, I would play. So it was more interesting for me, more harmonically leading tones and harmonically interesting and rhythmically interesting. And I just did it. And in fact, one guy came up and says, man, you don't need to do all of that. Oh, you sound good. But, you know, in the band, you just do, you know, you just play. That's all you need to do. That's your role. I said, okay, thank you very much. And I wait till he was out of sight. And then I went back to what I want. I went back to my thing, you know. So, turns out, I got a chance to go to St. Lucia, and I saw a banjo player there, and he played very melodically, which led to another tune on the album, or actually just the way I play, single note things. I like to do that. But it was my wife, Millie, who, before that happened, she told me one day, she says, you know, you play more like a Caribbean player than a New Orleans player. And that's because she was listening to Caribbean music, Creole stuff. And then she'd listen to New Orleans stuff, you know, the traditional bands, you know, the old Preservation Hall bands, the bands from other bands. And I mean, when I say Preservation Hall bands, there's so many different musicians.
Absolutely.
That played there, and they just went under the name of that.
Right. So, but do people do say, I mean, New Orleans is the northern capital of the Caribbean.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, listen to the way you play and listen to the way these guys play. I said, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. She says, but that's normal. That's how you should be playing. I said, oh, okay, thank you.
And people came around, you know, and it's amazing how over the years, you know, I mean, people have become they've taken on a far different, you know, sort of approach to banjo in the sense that people are embracing it, you know, maybe with the rise of Americana or with, you know, I mean, sort of, you know, greater interest in heritage and thing, you know what I mean? And, and embracing sort of, you know, a multicultural, you know, aspect of music and all, but banjo's totally different.
I would like to think that I'm part of that, awareness happening, but there were other people, like for instance, Bela Fleck was there.
Sure.
And he was very present in a different way. He had opportunities to do things in other ways.
But, you know, it's interesting that you should raise Bela Fleck because he's done, you know, a sort of a classical music piece, you know what I mean, that turns around banjo and other, you know, other instruments that are associated with more modern genres of American music and all. But you yourself did a classical piece for banjo played with which symphony was it?
It was the Hot Springs Music Festival Orchestra.
What's the name of the piece?
It's called the Reeser Suite. And Harry Reeser was a tenor banjo player in the 20s. I think he also played plectrum banjo. But he did some novelty type things that were, some of them were fast, some of them were just cute, like he did the cat and mouse things, like, and the cat sound. Tried to make the cat meow, meow, kind of thing. Or he did, I wonder if I can play it. I haven't played it in a long time, but that's the type of thing he did.
Right.
And I took three of his recordings and arranged them for orchestra. So it's like we started with, I think, Heeb Jeebs was one of them. That one interested me because it was sort of whole tone, like. Real whole tone. You know. Anyway, did that one. Flapperette was another one. I can't remember the last one.
Wait, let's listen. That's the one that I love so much.
Flapperette.
Yes.
That's the second movement. Yeah.
It's wonderful. Let's listen to that one.
My
Flapperette
favorite.
By Don Vappy. Wonderful piece, Don.
Thank you.
And,
you know, I took the most liberty with that one because I think it's a little slower than it normally is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was thinking about the image of Flapperette. It made me think about the ladies with the big hoop dresses and stuff walking with the parasol and all. And you hear the flute back there going,
sure.
That's birds. It's the birds fluttering.
I love that. Wow. I tell you, it's just been a pleasure talking to you. It really has.
You too, Gwen.
This has been a good This has been a good day.
You know?
And our guest is Don Vappi, whose latest album is called The Blue Book of Storyville. He's joined us at La Casita Studios in New Orleans. This is World Cafe. I'm Gwen Tompkins. And I'm going to ask you, Mr. Vappi, if you would be interested in playing one last song for us. And because I'm greedy and pushy, I'm going to ask for Tin Roof Creole Blues.
Okay, from the album.
From the album.
Here we go. Jolie fille, pourquoi vous pas viens ici? Jolie fille, pourquoi vous pas viens ici? Vous connaissez, je l'aimais vous, m'enlève-vous pour moi, chérie. Mais quelle jolie fille dans cette maison. Mais quelle jolie fille dans cette maison. Si vous croyez moi, j'essaie bien à temps. Jolie fille dans cette maison. Mais quelle jolie fille dans cette maison. Si vous croyez moi, je sais bien.
Oh, yeah. Our guest is Don Vappi, whose latest album is called The Blue Book of Storyville. He's joined us at La Casita Studios in New Orleans. This is World Cafe. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We'll be back after this.